Jesus made frequent use of exaggeration and hyperbole to illustrate his points. And the extracts from the Sermon on the Mount that we heard in tonight's Gospel reading contain some classic examples. Jesus does not literally mean that anyone who calls someone a fool will be sent to hell, or that you should pluck your eyes out or cut your hands off if they cause you to sin. Nor does he exactly mean that anger should be worth 20 years in jail, or that an erotic thought is just as serious as a full-on adulterous affair. And there were more examples of hyperbole than those, even in just tonight's extract. But, and this is a very big but, that does not mean that Jesus was not calling us to something beyond what we can readily imagine. Far too often, when dealing with the teachings from the Sermon on the Mount, people conclude that there's hyperbole and therefore they don't need to worry about it at all. There is plenty here that we need to allow to challenge us. In fact, I wonder whether it's a little bit like what the Apostle Paul was talking about in our second reading tonight when he distinguished between the milky teachings for spiritual infants and the solid meat teachings for those who are ready for it. I think perhaps Jesus is saying that the things covered in the law, like don't murder and don't commit adultery, are just a starting point for those whose lives need some basic limits to restrain the worst excesses, but that doesn't actually tell us very much about what God would really like us to become. What Jesus really wants to teach us, his solid, meaty teaching, is not about simply restraining some animalistic excesses, but about a total transformation from the inside out to lift us to a whole new level of humanity. Glorious, wonderful, full humanity. What Jesus is saying is that he doesn't want us to be the sort of people who just barely manage to keep ourselves out of jail. He doesn't want us to be the sort of people who are seething cesspools of bitterness and hostility, even if we do manage to pull ourselves up short of actually killing somebody. Just. He doesn't want us to be the sort of people who can't relate to any attractive person without our imaginations turning into seedy, degrading porno cinemas, even if we can still say, I did not have sex with that person, with a little bit more truthfulness than Bill Clinton. Jesus' intention for us goes a whole lot further than just constraining the extremes. Jesus wants us to be whole, to be free, to be life givers and peacemakers and community builders and generators of love and mercy and joy. In short, Jesus wants us to be like him. And that doesn't start really by just curbing behaviours, but by going to the core, by going to the roots. As I said 2 weeks ago when we were looking at the Beatitudes that open the Sermon on the Mount, the kind of behavioural standards that we are now hearing described in the Sermon on the Mount are the things that naturally flow if the Beatitudes describe the core of your being, the shape of your heart. They are not impossible to live, but you'll never produce them without first having your heart freed from the normal patterns of selfish and competitive human culture. I want to give most of my attention tonight to unpacking what Jesus says about anger, murder, and reconciliation. It's not that I'm afraid of the divorce and adultery part. Most of you know that I have been divorced and remarried, and I have addressed those issues quite often in my preaching, including the last time this passage came up. It's just that I think that the things that Jesus says about anger and murder get us to the heart of things more quickly, and it then becomes easier to see what he means with the other teachings. Which is probably why Jesus did it this way around himself. And since we don't have 1 hour sermons here, I'll just start where he started and settle for that tonight. So what is Jesus getting at here? We have trouble with it because we're so locked in to thinking about these things as law and therefore as part of a legal system of prohibitions and punishments. And in any such system, there's always a scale from smaller offences with light penalties through to major crimes with heavy penalties. And if you're approaching it with that mindset, then Jesus appears to be saying that every offence is just as bad as any other offence. Angry insults are as bad as murder. And every offence will be punished equally, and therefore the whole world is reduced to absolute black and white. One strike and you're out. Only the perfect will escape the fires of hell. And there's no doubt that what Jesus says can be read that way, because it is what Jesus says if you take it all literally. But I've not come across even the most literalist of churches that actually, in real life, treat every angry insult the same way they would treat a murder. So the churches are probably all agreed that such a literalist reading does not get to the heart of what Jesus was saying. But where do we go from there? By starting with the thing about anger and murder, Jesus is going straight to the heart of the basic truth about how the world works and the change that is needed to save it. Over and over in the news, we see stories about conflicts that have started over something small and escalated. It's as though we're still stuck in that infantile state that Paul names as we stand in the playground yelling, "He started it and I'm going to get him back." An offence is called, it is caused, and the offended one responds in kind, because we have trouble imagining any possible way of responding other than by balancing the scales. But have you noticed that almost never does the recipient of the retaliation respond by walking away saying, "Oh, well, fair enough, I got exactly what I deserved there and we're all quits now." Hardly ever happens. Almost always, even if there's an admission that they were at fault in the first place, the retaliation is seen as excessive and therefore as deserving a further, heavier retaliation, which is in turn seen as excessive. And so we see it played out all over the world, where something that begins as a minor insult between two people escalates step by step through insults to fists to weapons or legal proceedings, depending on your social class, and to the involvement of relatives and friends who are now trading insults and blows as well. And sometimes it even blows up all the way to full-scale tribal or ethnic conflict. One of your lot insulted one of our lot, and so before long there are angry mobs chanting in the street, and to back down would be to dishonour the whole group, and there's going to end up being a murder for sure. So Jesus is suggesting that it all starts with our determination that no insult or offence can be let go until the guilty party has paid. Offenders must be made to pay. And we dress it up and call it a justice system because at least that way it's regulated and it's less likely to keep escalating. But Jesus says whatever you dress it up as, the basic principle that underlies it is still payback or revenge. If you injure me in any way, I will ensure that you are made to pay. So Jesus suggests the only difference between the decision to cherish and feed your anger and an actual murder is a progression over time. They are just different stages of the same journey. And Jesus did not come to call us to cut short our journey on that track, but to take the whole journey on an entirely different track. Basically, Jesus says that when it comes to how you live in this world, you can be part of the problem or you can be part of the solution. You can contribute to the sum total of anger and bitterness and hostility in the world, or you can be one of those who absorbs whatever of it comes your way and returns none of it, thus reducing the sum total. But if you don't become part of the solution, but you don't actually become part of the solution by just not going so far down the payback and retaliation track. You have to change tracks completely if you're to become part of the solution. You have to get on the model yourself on Jesus track. You're modelling yourselves on others either way, because retaliation is actually always about modelling yourself on the enemy. I see what you do and I feel compelled to copy and do it back. And with each step, we double our contribution to the problem. Jesus calls us to copy him instead and model ourselves on him and become part of the solution. When Jesus was insulted, he sought no payback. He absorbed the venom and returned only love. When Jesus was ridiculed and mocked, he didn't return it in kind. He swallowed the barbs and returned only love. When they came after Jesus with clubs and spears and swords, he didn't call down the armies of heaven. He told his followers to put away their knives, and he handed himself over with his head held high. When Jesus was dragged before the courts on false charges, he didn't pour forth a string of countercharges against his assailants. He answered their questions, maintained his innocence, and returned only love and dignity. And when Jesus was tortured to death on a cross, he didn't curse his killers and scream out prayers for God's anger to be poured out on them in full come judgment day. He prayed for their forgiveness and rose from the dead 3 days later, not to bring down vengeance, but to continue his offer of forgiveness and reconciliation and love. Those who say that the ethics of the Sermon on the Mount are just a description of some future age and that they are impossible to put into practice now are failing to notice that Jesus has already put them into practice and lived them to the full. He's not calling us to do anything that he has not already done to the max. He simply calls us to repent, to turn our backs on the ways that we've always done things in the past, and to model ourselves entirely on the radical, self-offering love of God that we have seen played out in this one human life, removing all doubt about whether it's actually possible. It's difficult, for sure. It takes guts and prayer and the support of one another, but Jesus has proved beyond all doubt that it is entirely possible and that it changes the world. In a few minutes' time, we will be symbolically playing out a part of this reading, one of the more ordinary practical examples that Jesus gives about how it all looks when it's not quite at the blood and gore crucifixion stage. The church's practice of exchanging a greeting of peace with one another before we share the bread and wine at the Lord's table is based on the words that we heard from Jesus tonight about going and being reconciled with anyone who has something against you before proceeding to offer your gifts on the altar. The point is that in sharing the bread and wine here, we are accepting an offer of love and peace from Jesus. And that love and peace is not really offered to us as isolated individuals, but as people in community. It's not so much about you and Jesus as it is about you and his body, the whole community of those he loves and died for. It's an invitation to share at the table with others. And so it demands of you that you be willing to set aside any grudge or hostility that would stop you from sitting at table with these others. So the handshakes that really matter when we share the peace are not the ones with the people that you like and are glad to see, but the ones with those with whom you are finding it difficult to be in the same room as. And obviously a quick handshake is not going to make everything right. But if it's offered as a pledge of willingness to be reconciled and to work out that reconciliation in reality, then it's a starting place, and a healthy starting place. And starting places is really what Jesus is on about here. It's all about starting at the core, giving up anger and bitterness before it takes any sort of root or bears any sort of fruit. Jesus has shown us that it certainly isn't easy, but also that it certainly isn't impossible. It's about lifting our humanity to a new level, and it is nothing less than the guts of the gospel. The pathway of payback is the problem. The pathway of mercy, led by Jesus, is the solution, the salvation of the world. It's time to change track and follow him.